Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
On this week's Patreon-exclusive episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast, we're joined by Mary Spender and answer your questions from the Facebook group. We talk about everything from picking up the guitar to how you get out of a rut when you're trying to play new things. If you want to hear it, patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $1 a month, you can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. patreon.com/guitar nerds. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this morning by Jay Cross.
Hello.
Joe Branton. And the internet's Mary Spender.
Hello.
How's it going?
Yeah, good.
Nice to have a guest on the pod. No Matt today.
Thank goodness.
Because we're recording on bank holiday and he's got bank holiday stuff to do, like a grown-up normal human being.
Not like us.
Yeah, spending the morning sat around a desk. Vaguely hungover.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah,
I'm incredibly
fine.
Hungover.
I am good.
I had two beers.
I know you
didn't.
I thought you were going crazy.
Yeah, I had two beers. I was just getting in the bank holiday mood. And you know, a couple of beers, nothing wrong with that.
I've seen that version of you.
Mark went to see the wrestling.
Few people
and it
have.
Brought
he came
out
up
a adventurous side of him.
Well, it's just everyone's in a good mood. Like, I really couldn't wait for the bank holiday to begin this week. So yeah, I just thought, a couple of beers, what harm's it going to do?
Bloody lovely.
Turns out when you drink beer and you don't normally drink anything, you feel pretty bad in the morning.
I'm feeling pretty good visiting Brighton and being in the sun.
Yes.
I can't believe it.
It's beach day, isn't it? It's lovely, lovely weather. I'm so ready for the summer.
Me too.
None of this is guitar related. Mary, thanks for joining us. For people who don't know, do you want to just give us a... You've been on the podcast before, but for people who don't know, do you want to give us a quick overview of what you're up to these days and why we call you the internet's Mary Spender?
So, although I'm a singer-songwriter, I make some YouTube videos every so often. Well, every week. And yeah, things have been good. I went on a UK tour since I last saw you.
Yep.
I've done a bit of travelling, a bit of collaborating with some of our other YouTuber friends. And yeah, it's been good so far. And everything's going well. And I've got a video at the moment out that's doing all right on the Omec Teleport, which you were talking about last week.
So. We did. Yeah, we did quite a detailed rundown.
Your
video. Oh, I didn't see your video.
liar.
Yeah, it's doing all right, that vid. What did you think of the Omec?
I thought it was really impressive. I will be honest, and I would share this with Orange anyway. When they first showed it to us at the NAMM show, I was like, I don't know what that is. I don't understand it. It didn't register in my brain.
I didn't get it, but I was drunk.
It wasn't... I think the boys themselves even said it wasn't the best way to introduce the product, because I think even they were still trying to get their head around exactly what it did, because it is a marvellous little box of tricks that kind of does everything, basically.
It does everything. And I think there are... more ways for it to be used than even they know.
Yes.
And I spoke to the guy who created it and then took it to Orange to be like, do you want this? Is Danny Gomez. And yeah, he was very interesting to talk to about the whole conception of the idea and everything.
It's such a weird company to have put out that product. Like, that's not what we think of Orange for. I mean, even they themselves must have realised it was a weird product for them, because they didn't even release it under the Orange brand name.
Yeah, but I think it's super interesting that they're going that way. Imagine at least they have something now like that that is available rather than just, you know.
Imagine making something so cool that you think, like, right, there's real potential in this. which of my favourite companies am I going to go and deliver this money-making thing to, rather than I'm going to put this on Kickstarter and make a load of my money, myself.
Yeah. But it's the sort of thing I would have expected this to be released by Steinberg or
You know,
someone like that. But it would have, it totally wouldn't have made its way onto people's pedal boards.
Yeah.
The way it has by going to a guitar brand,
it screams of IK multimedia.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's that kind of thing, because it is that utility, and it's in itself, you know, it doesn't look particularly flashy, and it's not like a particularly exciting box to buy, because it is essentially just a sound card with some clever routing for ins and outs and stuff. But yeah, I think that's cool that he's gone, no, I'm not going to take this to IK multimedia, I'm not going to take it to, like you say, Steinberg, I'm going to go to Orange, the company who are least likely to have invented this thing that I've invented. I think it's cool.
But back in the day, they were very inventive.
Sure,
like the whole OMEC thing. So it kind of, it's just back to their lineage, isn't it?
Sure. And you know,
50th anniversary this year. So
things like the Tiny Terror obviously have been, you know, I hate to use the word, but game changing.
Yeah.
But their attempts at tech stuff in the past, I mean, they released a PC in the past, an Orange branded PC.
Oh. Do you know about the whiteboard?
Oh yeah, there was a
I do not know about this.
Okay, Jay, do you know about this?
No, I don't.
Okay, so Orange released, I think it's still on their website, listeners, so you should check it out if you can find it. They released for schools a digital interactive musical whiteboard. So it's
What year did they
like recently?
Fairly
like
recently,
last year, 2 years ago, 3 years
really?
Ago? Yeah, it was it was stupid money as well. It's like a 10 grand whiteboard that has like notes on it that you can touch, and it will make the sound of the notes. And I think it has like the music-y lines, and you can pen on the notes.
I love how it doesn't know what that's called. Yeah, the music-y lines.
What are those music-y lines called?
The staves.
Staves.
Yeah,
those things.
Thing is, with a product like that, that's the sort of thing where, yeah, obviously it's not made for us to buy. But, you know, if you get into...
I'd get one.
Well, okay, fine. But
if you were given one for free.
Yeah, maybe not 10 grand or whatever. But it's the sort of thing where if you get into some schools, or you get into the pool of schools that use it, then obviously that's a bit of a... That's probably an incredible product for a company like Orange. But... Yeah, saying they're not inventive is not actually true, because, you know, they have done this PC and this whiteboard, and they've, over the years, obviously, they've had some more successful inventions than that. But I think, you know, for someone like Orange, it's very easy to trade on their history and their name. It's, you know, for them to put out just, you know, like a OR15 or OR50 or whatever, that's an easy product. Mm. If they were just going to launch this OMEC, you know, it could be a kind of hit or miss product.
I think it's really got to be the catapult for the catalyst for like a sort of a sub brand.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, it's clearly why they've done it as.
Do you think they'll do more with the OMEC?
I think they've got to. Because
what does OMEC stand for?
I don't know. Orange, mate.
Isn't it something like Orange Musical Electronics Corp or something like that?
I'm sure
we can find it. But yeah, cool little product. Glad that you got on with it, because I think, like you say, even Orange themselves didn't realise exactly what potential there is there.
Yeah, but the way they released it, I thought, was quite clever. You know, the social media campaign and everything was quite modern of them. Initiative.
Yep. They've done that before, though. Do you remember when, maybe two years ago, when they released those headphones?
Oh, yeah.
They did that weird video.
They did a really weird video that was, we've been working for the last 44 years to build up our brand so that Cliff Cooper could release his... dream, which was some headphones.
Yeah,
it was all of these amps and all of these guitars and all of these pedals that we've been doing for the last 45 years, just so that Cliff could get the money to put together the R&D to make headphones. And it was like a 10-minute video. I was just like, what is going on here?
Advertising campaigns are always mad. Did you see the one they did recently that was like a QVC style
thing? Yes, I watched the whole thing and couldn't stop laughing.
How long was it? It was
outrageous.
It was so
for a brand to do that, it was very brave.
Like,
very, very
openly
brave.
Sort of swearing and slagging off their own products on a QVC video for maybe 10 minutes.
Oh wow, okay.
With like a drunk Scottish presenter.
That sounds good.
It was brilliant.
That sounds good.
It's actually one of the best pieces of marketing I've ever seen.
Yeah. Nice. They have like one of the guys who designed the amp. I can't remember what it was for, which I guess is bad marketing in that case. I remember the ad, but
the brand name, you know.
But they had one of the designers on talking about the tech side of things, and they had the QVC presenter deliberately like getting bored and talking about what a load of rubbish it was to talk about the actual.
I need to check this out. This sounds good.
Yeah, it's great.
Mary, last time we spoke, you were heavily into your Vigier guitars. Mm-hmm. Is that still the case? Have you picked up anything new since last time we spoke to you?
Have I picked up anything new? I have a Dan Electro.
Okay.
One of the 84s.
Okay.
The 84 is the Strat.
Yeah, the Strat. Okay. With the lipstick pickups, styled on Stevie Ray Vaughan's.
Okay. Any reason that you got that?
I got that because the company sent it to me.
Okay.
But I chose it. And it was just interesting to have something, you know, other than humbuckers in my collection. And it sounds great. And it's a really affordable guitar. And I like the headstock. That's pretty much why.
The headstock, has it got the kind of like bat wing headstock on it? It's like almost like a strap, but it's got a little funny sort of curve underneath.
Not quite. It's quite an oversized.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Normal looking headstock.
Interesting.
But just, and it's white as well.
I can't picture that. So you could have chosen any Dan Electro at that point, or is that the one that they were kind
of
pushing?
And I went for their most normal. I wish I'd gone for something like a bit crazier now, but it's, yeah, it sounds great as well.
It's a cool guitar. It's different for Dan Electro in that it's actually a. It's a sensible guitar. It's not. It's not sort of built on their. You know, all Dan Electros are a bit of a mission to play.
Not necessarily to play, but I think they are.
They require some adapting. They're not designed with ergonomics in mind.
No, sure.
They're cheap and a bit rubbish, but very fun.
Yeah,
is what you're trying to say.
That's what they are. And this is the first guitar that's not just doesn't seem to be designed with sort of aesthetics as the main drive. Well. It is just a Strat copy.
So is it, I guess it doesn't have like the traditional Dan Electro build of the, like, you know, basically kind of chipboard body with the tape around the edge.
No.
It's more just like a standard Strat.
It's more like a, yeah, sort of a, yeah, a budget Strat.
Okay.
But it's nice and it sounds good. So for a comparison video, which I did do of all 10 of my guitars, quite a lot of people chose that as their favourite.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
Like the Vigiers and Music Man, like, because my St. Vincent as well, stood out as well in terms of quality.
Yeah.
But just in terms of a nice sort of single coily sounding thing.
Yeah.
Which, and you know, I wouldn't play it on stage. It wouldn't be my live instrument, but for having that extra sound in your recording is quite nice.
Okay.
Good headstock on that.
It's a strong headstock, isn't it?
It's cool. I think it's all round a cool guitar.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be more like, do you know the headstock that's on the Epiphone, what are they called? Coronet style, where it's that like...
Oh, the Wiltshire thing.
The Wiltshire, thing, where it's like, they call it the bat wings. It's like kind of a Strat headstock, but it's got that weird bat wing shape underneath. But I've done a similar bit of guitar digging this week down the sort of vintage reissue route. I was looking a lot at airline guitars.
Oh, yeah.
Because they've done...
Big Jack White fan, aren't
you? Yeah. No. They've done a ton of new models. I know we looked at them before with the kind of custom shop stuff they do, but I didn't realise they're doing loads and loads of like Ventures style stuff, so Moss Wright style things, and you can even now get from them copies of famous Moss Wright copies. So for example, the Univox High Flyer, which is the quite famously played by Kurt Cobain, which is because he couldn't get a cheap left-handed Moss Wright, he bought this Univox High Flyer thing, which is a humbucker equipped hardtail Moss Wright copy. An airline now do a copy of that, but there's all sorts of stuff. They do copies of like old Kawai models and things like that. Weird Japanese stuff.
Dan Electro put out a Moss Wright copy this year.
Yes,
well,
they did the 64 on a, or 61 something like that.
But with
lipsticks.
With lipsticks.
Yeah, single lipstick.
It's £1,000 though.
But
Moss Wright's $3,000.
Well, Moss Wright's silly. But that, again, is kind of why I like airline. If you look at the pricing, pretty much everything on the site, there's a couple of models that just tip over $1,000, but not many, and not by much. They go up to like $10,999, something like that. But if you look at something like, for example, the Johnny Ramone model, I think it's called the Mac 2 or Mac 1. Maybe it's Mac 1.
Mac 10
is obviously a Moss Wright copy of his guitar, which is a bit of a kind of quirky model because it's single like Strat pickup in the bridge and then a mini humbucker in the neck, and it doesn't look like a normal Moss Wright. It's kind of a slab body. That if you buy it from Moss right now, I think is something like £3,499, which is crazy money when you consider it's, you know, it was originally quite a cheap guitar. If you buy one of those from Airline, I think they're 779.
Great.
Something like that. They also make, I saw Jay just looking at there, the Devo bass.
No, this is Eastwood.
Yeah, same company.
Just same company.
Isn't it?
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, fair enough.
So, yeah, sorry, I think actually it's Eastwood who make the, or under the Eastwood brand for all the Mosrite stuff as well. But yeah, they do the Devo bass, which is a recreation of. You might remind me of the bass player's
the
name.
One, the one that's shaped like a willy.
Yeah. Bob. It's not Bob Mothersbaugh, it's the other Bob in Devo.
Bob One. Yeah.
Okay, fine.
Is what they've called him here.
It sort of looks like,
it's quite phallic looking.
It
yeah,
is very it is. Phallic, yeah. But it's, I mean, why are they, you shouldn't need to reissue that, do you know what I mean? It's just like, they're doing it because they can, and probably there'll be enough Devo fans out there who will buy one. Can you remember what sort of money they are? Have you got
Like £500.
Yeah,
it's not very much money. The price of everything in the Eastwood catalogue.
Yeah, between five and a grand. Basically,
if we're talking about the Devo guitars, I really like the Whip It.
Yeah, I've seen this. Is this new? Because I've seen this turn up on a few.
It's a Les Paul, but the cutaway,
the lower horn,
the lower cutaway is angled away from the guitar. It's so weird.
Yeah, it does.
It's
look
so
stupid.
Weird. And the headstock is really weird because it's a Devo hat, which is really cool. It's really weird. These aren't Eastwood branded. Well, they've got Eastwood on the Truss Rock cover, but they're not Eastwood branded guitars. Not really. These are branded as Devo guitars.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's going on there.
It's such a weird guitar.
I think what they're doing is they are buying the license to make these guitars under the name. So if you look at the Univox, for example, I'm pretty sure it has Univox on the headstock and it doesn't have Airline or Eastwood on the headstock.
Right, okay.
So I think that's their kind of whole MO, really, is they're going back and finding these cool guitars that no one's making anymore, finding out who owns the license to the name, and then producing the guitars under that name. So
it's cool.
Good on them.
Yeah. The only thing I don't like about Eastwood is their logo.
Well, like I was saying, on a lot of the models, it doesn't even feature Eastwood on
which
there.
Which is great.
Yeah.
That's what I want.
But yeah, they do some mad stuff. Obviously, they make that little tenor guitar for
Warren Ellis
from Grinder Man.
And actually, I was just looking at that. There's a whole whole range now. There's the Warren Ellis 6, which is basically a Mustang. The Mando Cello, which is a Mustang bass. Left-handed version, Mando Stang, which I guess is a Mustang mandolin. I don't know. There's loads of stuff. A couple of tenor guitars. I mean, Warren Ellis is just like the coolest geezer in the entire world.
Yeah, yeah. He's
fantastic.
Noah Taylor the other day.
Did you?
He's his bandmate. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. From
Game of Thrones and Submarine.
Yeah, I was trying to remember the name of that band that they did together.
He lives in Brighton, basically.
The Rhinestone Immaculates.
There we go.
That was the name of that band.
Nice, nice.
Did anyone read that article from the fella who runs Eastwood?
No.
About Gibson.
Yeah.
No, I saw it posted a couple of times. I didn't get around to reading it.
It's a really good article, really worth a read. It's his take on the situation with Gibson. Well, with everything, with sort of the internet jumping on the word bankruptcy without really having any understanding of what Chapter 11
means. I did actually read this article, I just remembered.
You did, yeah, exactly. And he talks about the he references obviously the now legendary the slow death of the electric guitar article, and he talks about his take on it and how it has nothing to do with guitar becoming less popular, more the greed of the larger corporations in the industry and how their expansion was always unsustainable.
Yeah, it's more about the companies growing too fast and the rest of the industry growing at a regular, like the normal pace, basically.
Yeah.
I think the article is actually more about debt, essentially, and you know how taking on debt obviously allows you to expand, but it doesn't always allow you to expand in a sustainable way. And companies like Eastwood, it seems, haven't taken on that sort of debt, and seem to be, you know, particularly passionate about the products, and they've found their audience in people that want like weird kawaii issues. And I mean, it's a niche audience, I'm not going to lie, but
yeah, it's that kind of passionate fan base that is going to sustain companies. And that's essentially the thrust of the article, isn't it? Is, you know, their smaller companies seem to be thriving, while obviously the big guys are struggling with this huge amount of debt that they've all taken on.
So, yeah.
Yes, interesting stuff. Now, one thing that Eastwood and Airline do across a few different models is Bass 6 tuned instruments. And Joe, this week you've had a chance to get your hands on the real deal.
Yes!
Tell us about it.
So at work this week, we took in an actual 1963 Fender Bass 6.
Amazing.
Yeah, exactly. It's a commission sale, and it's up for £8,500, which is a lot.
Seems like a lot of money to me. We were talking about it at work.
I think that's a lot of money for what it is, but it's a commission sale, so it's the price is defined by the owner of the instrument, not by us as a retailer. So, I do think that's quite dear. But they're also extraordinarily rare.
Yes. And that's the thing. You can kind of charge what you want, because someone probably will pay that at some point. It's just... how long are you willing to wait for it? Yeah, I mean, you could put it up at £5,000 and it'll probably turn over quite quickly.
Yeah.
But if you don't need the money, put it up for more money and someone will eventually pay it.
Exactly. Know? But yeah, a really well-gigged Bass 6. I put a couple of pictures of it up on the Facebook group. But yeah, really super heavily gigged Bass 6. It had been used on a television show in the 70s. And they had to cover up the logo with some tape.
Right.
And that tape was then left on.
Oh.
And has worn in and through the logo. So you can see the Fender logo, but that Fender logo has become part of the sellotape and is now raised and sits away. It's so weird. It's such a weird, like, this is what happens if you leave sellotape on a headstock for 40 years.
Yeah. What does that do to the value of it?
Well, nothing really.
I mean, it's worth £8,500, apparently.
Yeah, exactly.
So
I mean, find a 63.
Yeah.
You know, instrument that isn't well gigged. I mean, it's unusual to see a Bass 6 as well gigged as this.
I was going
to
ask.
The instrument didn't take off. So yeah. Like, I mean, it doesn't work as an instrument, I think.
We've had this conversation about Bass 6 before. You know, it's like not. It's not the most. Oh, they're quite a temperamental thing in terms of tuning and what you can actually do with them, which is, rare to see a well-gigged one. Because if they do come up, usually this is loads of money because it's in the case, it's never really been played, and it's had one owner, and they sort of put it under the bed and forgot about it. But yeah, I mean, what would be your uses? When you think about how music has changed since 1963 until now, you could probably use a Tele for that entire time. You could probably use a Strat or a Les Paul for that entire time. Why are you using a Bass 6 in the new romantic era? Do you know what I mean?
It is
1983 or 1981 or whatever. What's the use for a Bass 6 at that point?
Completely. I mean, the only thing I can imagine is that it was being used as a bass.
It sounds fantastic. It does. It's super, super subby. And the mutes have like rotted away, unfortunately, which is kind of my favourite thing about the old Bass 6s, is being able to use that little mute
a little what?
Thing. A little mute thing, but yeah, it's a cracking instrument.
Nice. I might head into town today and see it. Do you know? Is it in the shop?
Yeah,
it's awesome. I'm gonna go and have a look. With that, should we dive into?
I bought a guitar this week.
You did. Let's talk about that before we dive into.
Yeah, you bought a guitar this week.
Yeah,
sort
wait,
of.
Wait.
It's kind of half
is it
a guitar.
The guitar that you've just had for ages.
No.
All right.
No.
What did you buy?
Finally paid off.
I bought a Mark Hoppus bass.
Oh, right.
Really?
Yeah.
It's Oh, you moved it.
When
I
you
don't
say
know where it is.
A guitar, I mean, firstly, obviously, it's a bass, but secondly, quite a lot of it is missing.
Yes, I picked up very, very cheap. So I got a Mark Hoppus P bass. Well, a Mark Hoppus jazz bass, because I wanted. You know, we've talked about this before. You know how you always want to have a backup instrument, but you don't really want to have anything that's too different from what you use, because. Well, the whole point of if you need to use your backup, you want something that still sounds kind of similar to what you were doing. I mean, certainly if you're playing in a punk band, you do. And so I've always thought, like, I quite want a jazz bass because they do look cool, but I just don't like the way they sound, and like I like the way that a P bass works. And you know, Mark Hoppus jazz bass is a jazz bass with a P bass pickup and a P bass neck. So I got it super cheap. But the reason I got it super cheap is that there's no machine heads and no plate. And trying to find
no strings, and one of the ferrules is out the back from what I saw.
Yeah, but that's fine. I can figure that all out.
So it's a work in progress.
It's most certainly a work in progress. But they're really cool. It's in surf green, which is a great colour. But the problem is, we'll be finding a plate for it, because obviously it is a jazz bass, but it's P bass pickups. So I was thinking about maybe speaking to the Pick Guardian, okay, who is a Guitar Knobs contributor who runs a website that sells pick guards. And I was wondering if I could maybe get him to make me a shell pink plate.
Shell pink.
Why do you like shell pink plates? Where is this idea?
It's so
come
weird.
From?
I just think it'd be cool.
Shell pink on surf green does not work.
It'll be like a refresher lolly.
I think it would be cool.
It'd be like a...
Do you remember those flea bases?
Yes.
That's what it's going to look like.
Joe, you are out of line, mate.
That is 100% what it's going to look like if you get a shell pink plate on there.
Well, we'll see. I do want to get a shell pink plate for my telly. So, we'll see.
Wasn't there a custom Fender that was ordered by GAC that was sparkly surf green and then had a pink plate? Am I remembering that right?
No, I'm not remembering that. I don't think we've ever had a pink plate.
There was like a relict. It was beautiful, but it was weird looking.
What was it?
I can't remember.
Probably won't have had a pink plate, because I'm not sure that that's actually available from Fender, but...
Is it?
In the custom shop.
I think you can
probably do anything in the custom shop.
I think so.
Well, no, ish. There are still limits on what you can get from the custom shop.
No, there's not.
You couldn't get a pink scratch plate from Fender custom shop.
Okay, J Cross, it actually is exactly what the flea bass was.
Yes.
The flea bass was available in green and it did have a pink plate.
That's like forest green. That's not surf green. That's like hot pink.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about shell pink. Okay. But anyway, I'm looking forward to it because, you know,
it's a new bass, isn't it?
New bass, and maybe it'll sound the same as my current one.
It won't do because it's got those quarter pounders in there, which
it does have
for me
quarter
are
pounders.
Some of the worst sounding P bass pickups ever.
Quarter
made.
Pounders are the best pickups.
Can't you change them out?
Yeah, I'll change them out for something.
It's quite an expensive project at this point.
You know, it is what it is.
Indeed. With that, shall we crack on with a whole big bunch of
new.
Good. First up this week, Epiphone announced a brand new guitar, a signature model for Jason Hook, who I have no idea who that is, but I'm sure you let me know. The M4 Explorer.
Yeah.
Five-finger death punch guitarist.
Okay. Fine. Yeah.
How did you not know that? I thought you would know that.
Oh, I mean, they're my favourite band. They're my favourite band. So.
I thought you would be into that band.
No. Well, they're a metal band, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. You love metal.
Sure.
That's why you're sitting across the table from me in your leathers. So anyway, yeah, this
thought is. Thought we'd keep the chaps to ourselves.
So this, so the M4. This is not a very exciting guitar, certainly not for us. It's an Explorer, which is great, but it's another one of these kind of extreme signature models. In that it's very signature model-y. So it's an Explorer in a red and white sort of weird badge. Design with a star and
is it like the Five Finger Death Punch logo
yes,
or something?
It's something like that. So in like a red and white, comes with Seymour Duncan's, a pair of humbuckers, and like it looks like it will be an affordable, cool. Like comes with a gig bag, which is very important when it's an Explorer shape.
Yeah,
It looks okay. It's another one of these guitars that will not last very long from Epiphone. If you're into Five Finger Death Punch, then get one. I can't see this instrument sort of having any wider appeal.
Is there anything special about the spec? What are we thinking, like pickup wise, or is there anything different, or is it just the basic Epiphone Explorer with a fancy paint job?
There's Seymour Duncan's in it.
Oh, sorry, I missed that.
Yeah, that's the sort of one.
Do we know what they are?
No, it's just listed as Seymour Duncan humbuckers.
I've got details.
Oh.
Do you want to read them?
Oh, you do. Yeah, okay, so
I don't know what any of that means. That's why I'm making you.
So they're just so it's just like it's an SH4 and an SH1.
Oh, right, so
it's like
pretty standard pickup configuration.
Pretty standard, just like PAF styles.
Yep, fine. Interesting. What I find weird about these things is are there enough people who like Five Finger Death Punch who want to buy an Epiphone Explorer that this is financially viable? That I don't really understand how these work.
Will it just be made to order?
No, if it's an Epiphone.
No.
It'll be made in China, and they'll just have to make. There'll be a minimum order quantity of
some.
Who knows? Some thousands.
The thing. So they. I think in some cases they've got it correct, and maybe I'm underselling the popularity of Five Finger Death Punch. Things like the Lee Malia, obviously Bring Me the Horizon, pretty big band, and it was a pretty standard looking guitar. You know, it was like a brown mahogany Les Paul custom,
so it's not such a worry that it's a signature.
Exactly.
It was very tasteful. The whole Lee Malia range was great. What was it? A Les Paul, an RD,
and the Explorer. And then things like the Matt Heafy as well, which is just like a kind of modern looking Les Paul custom with active pickups, six string or seven string. You could buy that potentially if you weren't a Matt Heafy fan. But the ones that I think. I wonder how they make it work financial wise are the ones that are so signature model, you know, custom paint jobs for bands that you know.
I mean, they've got 5 million likes on Facebook. That's quite a lot of people. You know,
yeah, I guess.
And I, you know, would we have been saying this when that Schecter Sinister Gates came out 10 years ago or whatever, and that guitar is just so popular now?
Sure, but I think that that is a different case because it's so custom, and in a different way to this. You know, this is just an Explorer in a weird paint job. Whereas, you know, that was a whole new body shape. It was designed specifically for him, and I don't know, there seems to be something a bit more kind of culty around that band.
Is there any point in a signature model unless you're making like a big change?
But do you think that's the trick to a signature model, is to make something that is kind of standard but unique in some way? There must be a fine line. I don't know how you would give me an example. Well, I don't know, like you saying that the Lee Malia was in like a nice colour.
I think it can go one of two ways.
It still had weird pickups, the Lee Malia, didn't it?
Sure. I think it depends on the fan base. So for example, the St. Vincent is a completely new body and is kind of quirky, but I think she
has transcended everything.
Well, I think she's got enough of a, she's got the right fan base for that guitar to work. I think with something like the James Valentine, for example, I don't think people are buying it because they're fans of Maroon 5 or James Valentine particularly.
It's because it's beautiful, a great guitar.
Yeah. You know, it's like a pretty standard shape. Mm. It's got a pickup configuration that's pretty standard and works across a range of genres. So I think there's two ways you can go.
Same can be said of the Michelangelo Battiato range of guitars.
Sure.
Did you actually see Jack White playing a St. Vincent on TV?
Vincent posted about it, didn't she?
But it was awesome because it was just like he was one of the first celebrities to buy one,
really?
I think. Yeah.
And he's now playing Eddie Van Halen signatures.
What is he doing?
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
He was the coolest dude.
I've not listened to that new record. Is it like, have you listened to it?
No, I don't want to listen to it. He started wearing like 80s leggings.
Yeah.
And he's bought Eddie Van Halen. He's playing, is he playing EVH amps as well.
Oh, I don't know about the amps. He's definitely playing the guitars.
He is, isn't he? Jay?
I don't know.
No? Yeah, I think he's playing EVH amps.
I'm not a huge Jack White fan, yeah. Joe. I don't know if he we've is. Talked
he
about
is.
This.
Is he just reinventing EVH. Himself? He's just trying to go
that's
somewhere.
Kind of it's a rubbish reinvention.
That's kind of why I want to listen to that record.
But surely there's always a rubbish reinvention to then go into the next reinvention, which might be good again.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe.
I hope.
Hopefully.
I really am curious about that record because it's got a very 80s looking cover. It's kind of like a weird, almost like early 80s prog.
He's got Floyd Rose on his guitar. He's got three humbuckers.
He has actually.
He does.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. So yeah, I'm kind of curious as to how that pans out. But yeah, I think signature models can go either way. For me, this one kind of falls in the middle, really. It's not like custom enough to warrant other people who aren't fans of the band looking at it. But also, are there enough Five Finger Death Punch fans who want to buy an Epiphone Explorer with a crazy paint job? I don't know. So,
what's your favourite signature model of all time?
Ooh, the Les Paul.
J Cross?
My favourite signature model of all time might be the Joan Jett Blackheart.
Good shout. Good shout.
The Joan Jett
Gibson
Blackheart.
Joan Jett.
What was it?
It was basically a melody maker, a double cut melody maker, but with a slightly different curvature to the top and lower horns, and it had hearts on the 12th fret.
Oh, that's so cool. What I really like pickup configuration.
I think it was
single humbucker.
I think it was just a humbucker.
Yeah, yeah. That's cool.
Or was it two? Mm,
no, I think it was two humbuckers actually, and it had a kill switch. Mary,
that's cool.
I think it's, you know.
Well, I guess it's going to be obvious. Like the Saint Vincent is obviously extraordinary, but I was actually looking at Albert Lee's the other day. I was like, no, that's it. And I think the fact that we've mentioned James Valentine, Albert Lee, Saint Vincent, that just shows Music Man to be like king of signature models. The tastefulness and beauty behind those guitars 100%. Is just extraordinary.
That brand are firing on all cylinders. Like, it's kind of all anyone else at the moment.
What's interesting is it's kind of all they do now.
Yeah.
They obviously used to do a range of the Axis stuff and Super Sports and things like that, and now they don't really do that. They just do signature stuff.
Yeah.
Which is cool because they're all unique body shapes as well.
But
it's
also,
not like
the standard line's cool as well. Don't forget like the Cutlass and the Stingray guitars.
Sure, that's true. Actually, I'd forgotten that they're doing that stuff.
The Cutlass is banging, and the they sent a Stingray for me to use in videos for GAC, and it's great. I didn't realize how good it was. I also didn't realize it's a mahogany body. So the Stingray is their double humbucker. Guitar.
Oh, sorry, the Stingray guitar. I thought you were talking about bass.
No, no,
the guitar, the Stingray guitar. I wish they hadn't called it that because the Stingray is such an iconic name for bass. Mm. But yeah, mahogany body. Oh, they look great. Those Stingray guitars.
I kind of miss that Stingray bass that I had.
I think the level, the range of people that they've chosen to have signatures is also super interesting. Like having Albert Lee, then John Petrucci.
Yeah,
like they couldn't be more different.
Well,
and
even back to
St. Vincent, and then James Valentine.
Well, and I mean, even back to the sort of the earlier ones like Steve Morse and who else had one? Who had one after Steve Morse? There's someone else of that ilk. It doesn't matter, but yeah, it's a wide range of artists. It's cool.
Yeah.
Hopefully they'll just have more women.
If you could
Absolutely.
If you could do it again, would you get a double humbucker version of the? Of this Vincent, or do you prefer the three mini humbuckers?
No, I like the three mini humbuckers, but I've played the double humbucker one now. But
do you use that middle pickup much?
No.
But why wouldn't you? Like, I'd use
because they sound rubbish.
No, they don't.
It's texturally interesting for recording, like having that extra thing.
The
so
second
I've used
bin on the pickup selector would be the same as like a Strat. The top two pickups on a Strat, which is the best sound.
Yeah, but that's turning two single coils into a humbucker as opposed to turning two humbuckers into a quadrubucker. Mm. You know,
maybe
I don't actually know how the
switching
works
on the Sterling St. Vincent that I've got. I just use that because it sounds great.
Really? Okay. Yeah, you love Out of Phase though, which
I
is
love
weird.
Out of Phase.
It's because you're a big Dire Straits fan.
I really love Dire Straits. He's so cool.
God, unbelievable. Some more news from Earthquaker Devices. Brand new pedal, the Pyramids Stereo Flanger.
Why are they releasing a flanger? This pedal is like £350.
Yes.
Pounds. Like, of all the modulation effects in the world, flanger must have died a death in the last sort of 20 years more than any other effect. And then Earthquaker come along and they're like, it's not like, oh yeah, here's we're putting a flanger in our range. They're putting an absolute top tier, all singing, all dancing, £350 double foot switch flanger.
Before we get into it, modulation effects, rank them. Top three, J Cross.
Reverb.
That's not modulation.
No, modulation.
Delay.
That's not modulation.
And then reverb again.
That's not modulation.
Modulation effects. I would say I don't really use modulation. Chorus. I quite like chorus if it's tasteful.
So if you, what I'm saying is basically chorus, flanger, phaser. If you had to put those in the top three,
well, vibrato's in there as well, mate.
I hate all of them.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
What?
I can't use any.
Most of my pedal board's made up of modulation.
Yeah, that's why none of us like your band.
Oh.
Yeah.
So we all know that the correct answer is at three, chorus. Two,
chorus is good.
No, chorus is the worst.
No, chorus is two.
Two flanger and one phaser.
What?
Really?
100%.
Spender?
I just hate all of them. I don't even want to choose.
It's clearly vibrato.
That wasn't in
chorus,
the three that I was talking
phaser,
about.
Phaser, like in that order. Vibrato, you should never turn off. Just have vibrato on all the time.
No. Chorus is
I
the
do.
Worst. Yeah, I know. That's why your band sounds bad.
I used to have phaser on all the time. I used to have a phase 90 on and it's slower setting.
See, I quite like that.
Time.
I quite like that.
That's cool.
I think that like psych bands get away with that really. It's really, really good. I've been listening to a lot of Wooden Ships recently and they do that. They just have the phaser on all the time. But I also just think they put the entire record through a phaser as well.
Just at the mastering
just,
stage.
Yeah, like. Just like, right, let's get that phase 99 out. Let's just double it up.
When I was at school, there was a rival band to mine and the dude thought he was really cool because he had a Digitech GNX something
said
or other. Like one of the first ones. No, sorry, RP1000 or something, like okay. The very early Digitech stuff. And he
that would have been massive, right?
It was huge, yeah, like yeah. Plastic pedal board. Maybe it was metal, but it had like plastic stuff on it. And he had the Jet flanger on for the entire. That was their band, like that was his sound. So just like he'd be playing normal chords and it was just going.
Yeah, that sounds great. That's like, it sounds like Wooden Ships record.
My hatred of these is the reason why my pedal board is so small, because like what do I need for my style of music?
Yeah.
If I was doing math rock, then yeah, I'd want all these things.
I don't understand why you wouldn't just have one on all the time. Otherwise, you just what do you sound like?
Thing is, if you were doing math rock, you'd have basically no mates and no one would actually like your music. So it's fine.
Yeah, I wouldn't be on this podcast. Yeah.
So, are there any other details about the pyramids?
Yeah, well, yeah, the pyramids is okay. So it's a multi-flanger. So it has a ton of modes. So you've got like eight presets. So it does everything from like a vintage traditional style flanger to sort of these really like modern synthy and you can push it really far. You can push the flange itself really far, so it kind of does everything in one. Has a tap tempo.
That's interesting.
That is interesting. You don't have to use it. You can it can be used as a tap. You can control it with the rate, or it has three preset sort of slow, normal and fast as well, which is great. I think it was surprisingly usable. I find flanger to be too much. Because a good modulation should be a subtle modulation. That's where it's used well, and that's where people get the wrong idea about modulation, is that they overuse it. Used subtly, as in not like The Cure, it can be a great asset to any sound, and this can do that, but also do all the weird synthy things. I actually think because it's stereo as well, I think it's great for keys players. It's super psychedelic.
Definitely,
cool pedal.
Good stuff from Earthquaker. J Cross, you're a man who loves a bit of signal management.
I'm a huge fan of signal management.
So
you quite often find me down at the down on the train line,
just managing the signals.
Managing the signals,
having a great time. Well, you'll be pleased to know two brand new signal management pedals from Mesa Boogie, the Head Track and Switch Track.
Yes,
which is
why
also
are we talking
ironically
about this?
Or also ironically what you do down on the train line.
I do. I head to the track and then I switch the track.
You do indeed. Tell us about them.
So the Switch Track is a very industrial looking ABY pedal. There are such great options on here as A or B.
Yep.
Or A and B.
Sweet.
Or mute.
Nice.
So
all right, ABY pedals are actually quite important.
Sure.
And finding a good one is hard.
Yeah.
So this is a good product.
It all depends on the pricing for me, because there are some very good ABY solutions out there from like Layla, however you pronounce it.
Orange. They probably make the best one.
Orange makes some good stuff. I'm still a fan of the Layla stuff.
What was that?
I just bit my tongue. That's how enthusiastic I was about this product.
In all seriousness, this is good. One of the things that we used to get asked in the shop all the time was, I just want a cheap amp switcher. What can you recommend? Yeah. And unfortunately, if you get a cheap amp switcher, the likelihood is it will sound bad, because what it does is it just splits it. But I mean, it's not quite as simple as this, but what it does is it kind of just splits your signal in half. So half your signal goes to one side and half your signal goes to the other side. Neither of your amps are getting the full level of signal, and it just sounds a bit rubbish. So what Mess Boogie have done, which is what all good line selectors and ABY pedals should have, is they're buffered.
Yeah.
So it's buffered, and it's going to send your full signal down A and B if you're using them concurrently. But what I find really interesting here is it actually also has it's also got MIDI. Now I don't know. I haven't been able to find out whether you can MIDI and whether you can switch the MIDI and the and your amps at the same time.
I would assume it's only MIDI in, so you're controlling. Does it say MIDI in and out?
It's MIDI in and through.
Okay, yeah, so that makes sense. So yeah, basically you're able to do the switching, so the audio routing that the pedal is providing, mm-hmm. through a switcher. So you could potentially have that away from your pedal board, or you know, in your rack somewhere, and it would still do the switching.
Yeah.
But you could control it with, for example, an ES8 via MIDI, sort of thing. So,
gotcha.
So what's the difference between the switch track and head track?
Well, the head track,
yep.
is a head switcher.
Ah.
Now, a head switcher is actually far more complicated, because, excuse me, obviously one of the things that you need with when using two guitar heads is you need to be keeping a load,
yes,
running through both of them. Otherwise, you're just going to end up in a world of pain when your amps blow up. So this is actually very cool. It's really simple. It really is just a case of, on face value, it's just A or B. But when you look at the back, there's loads going on there. And the reason that there's loads going on there is, as far as I can tell, and I do apologise, I need to do a little bit more digging on it, it looks like you're able to run your effects loop through the head track,
okay,
which will allow you to run your effects loop through both amps, depending on which one you're using at any one time.
That sounds cool.
It sounds very, very cool. Very cool.
So it's providing basically an effects loop for your entire system.
Yes.
If you're using multiple heads.
Yes.
Interesting.
So
okay.
You can go in through the front end if you want, but you can also use this to put your modulation pedals through both effects loops of both amps.
I wonder how that works, because you could potentially, does it show like ins and outs on there?
Yes.
How many ins and outs has it got? Has it got basically an effects loop for both?
There appears to be 13
connections.
Yeah.
Interesting. So yeah, I guess it's basically doing effects send and return for both of the amps.
Yeah.
So that would be at least 4 jacks on the back, and then you'd obviously have to have the effects loop for the pedal itself. So yeah, you'd be using 6 cables to do that.
Yeah, there's a lot going on here.
Interesting.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So we kind of, before we start recording, we're a bit like, oh, what is there to talk about these products? Like, is there anything actually interesting here?
Yeah.
And yeah, it turns out it seems like the head track is more interesting product than the switch track.
Yeah. And yeah, I've just found a video on it actually. I need to watch this later. Very cool.
Have we got pricing?
No.
Okay, good. Thanks for your help. Is there nothing there?
I'm looking.
Okay, fine. Well, if you find that, let us know.
I'll yell.
Okay, fine. In the meantime, we should delve into a big bucket of
questions.
That was Strange. So what I think we'll do is we have some regular questions. We also have some questions for Mary, but we might do that in the Patreon. Let's see how these ones shake out first. So first up, Corey says, what's the best way to improve your... The best way to improve your tone is practice, but sometimes a piece of gear can make a big difference in improving your tone. Having said that, what piece of gear, will be it a guitar, amp or pedal, has had the biggest impact on improving your tone? Mary Spender.
Learning to use a compression pedal, possibly.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
It's probably like the most boring answer I could go for. You could say the drinking game title, Turnip Greens, but no, compressors for me.
Really? So adding a compressor. What are you using at the moment in the rig?
I've got the Kongpressor by Orange.
Have you ever used anything other than the Kongpressor? Did you use something before?
Yeah, I used the MXR Custom Comp.
Oh, the Custom Comp.
Mm.
That's a good pedal.
Yeah.
I like the Custom. Wait, is the Custom Super Comp, is that different from the Super Comp? Because the Super Comp was the one that had gain on it as well as... it's just a two.
The Custom just had two, yeah.
Right. What is the Custom then? Is it just like a fancy version of the Dyna?
I think it's just, yeah, different sound to the Dyna. Well, Dyna Comp is single control, isn't it?
Two controls.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm thinking of microamp.
Yeah, you're thinking of the microamp.
Yeah.
It's just a cool preamp. You know, Flea uses one of those. Weirdo.
Good. That's how you summed up Flea's whole career.
Weirdo. So wait, the Kongpressor's got a ton of controls on it,
yeah,
though, right?
Yeah.
But it's still an analog compressor.
Yeah?
Yeah, it is. I don't know how you get loads of controls on a non-multiband compressor. I don't understand that about the Kongpressor. I expect to just be able to...
Well, I mean, there's tons of things you can add to a compressor. You could do attack release, you could do sustain, you could do makeup gain, you could do ratio. Yeah, there's tons of things that you could have on there. It's just normally, you know, if you see like a rack compressor, there's hundreds of control, you know, mostly because they're multi-band, but even just single band compression, there's a lot you can do with compression, because it is quite a complicated effect, although the end result is, you know, not particularly fancy. You know, it's not like a stepped phaser or something. There is a lot you can do with compression, but actually on guitar pedals they tend to scale it back, because guitarists in general don't know how to use compressors, which is why the most famous ones, things like the Dynacomp, are so simple.
Yeah.
What do you use a compressor for? Like, how do you
I have it always on, like, right, really heavy compression on my playing, just to even everything out.
It's because your style of playing, I guess, because you're doing a lot of finger-picking stuff and, you know, do, like, bass lines at the same time as you're doing lead lines.
Yeah.
Yeah, compressor is super important for that.
Very
that
necessary,
stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Joey B, what's the piece of gear that's had the most impact on your tone? Don't say a compressor.
A bass.
It's the thing that never comes off my pedal board. But, okay, for being different.
So you were going to say compressor as well?
Well, of course, I always say compressor. It's my thing. Vibrato.
That's, but you don't use vibrato.
Improved your tone. That's just improved your sound, surely.
Oh yeah, but I always have it on.
Do you actually always have a vibrato on?
No, not always. Always.
Right.
He's just trying to be different.
But you do. You do have a compressor on all the time.
Yeah, of course. And compressors are super important. I think if you want something that if you use it kind of like a preamp, I kind of think that's the thing. That's the answer to this question from everyone. Should be that thing that you use, that make gooderer. And I think compressors are a great solution for that. I really like the Philosopher's Tone, the ZVEX Philosopher's Tone. I think that is a
ZVEX Pigtronics.
Pigtronics Philosopher's Tone. I think that that pedal's great at giving like a little bit of vintage grit to your tone at the same time as doing the job of compression. I think the same of the MXR Super Comp.
Yep.
Just that gain control on a compressor is really, really usable. The MXR Dynacomp Mini, because it has a little like a gain switch that you can use, so it just, again, it makes it like that. Although I'm really into the Pettyjohn filter at the moment.
Yeah.
And I've been using that on bass, and I think it sounds fantastic. The Amoratsu... what's that company? Is it Rock?
Ground Control.
Ground Control Audio, Amoratsu. Using that boost
Amaterasu
pedal. Amaterasu, yeah. With the boost off, just warms everything up. That's the answer, is that cool preamp pedal.
Yeah.
That just gives you that tone thing that you
Je
like.
Je ne sais quoi.
Yeah.
J. Cross.
Mine is a bit more boring, to be completely honest with you.
It more boring than a compressor.
More boring than a compressor.
When I switched to green Dunlop guitar picks.
When I switched to heavier strings.
Okay.
When I went from using 45 105s to 50 to 110s.
Is that what you use now? 50 110s?
No, sorry, not 50 110s. 50 to 120s.
Oh. Wait.
Yeah.
Use 50 120s. But don't you play in like wimpy pop tuning?
Yeah,
oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's
is that those
balanced tension?
Those Daddario balanced tensions.
No, I'm not into that.
Oh, you're crazy. They're the best bass
strings.
They're not. 100%
the
best bass strings.
They sound fantastic.
If we're talking about things that have an impact on bass tone, I think that that is the best thing that you can buy. That particular set.
They're really, really good. They sounded fantastic. But when I started this new band and I went back to playing bass after playing guitar for a year and not really playing bass, I found that they were really difficult to play. So I went back to 45 105s, but I am going to go back to those 50 110s, 50 to 120s.
Weirdly, because there's that balanced tension thing going on, I found them easier to play than a set of, like, what's the regular gauge? 50 to 110s.
No, 45, 105 is your standard bass.
Well, yeah, sure.
50 to 110s.
A standard heavy gauge would be 50 to 110, or if you're only ball 55, 110.
Yeah, I have found that actually the Daddarios feel better to play because there's the D and G are the A and D are different gauges to what would normally be in that set.
So these, there, it's a 50, a 67, a 90, and a 120.
Yeah,
very weird.
That's a really heavy gauge.
There's just something about what they do to overall tension.
I don't understand how that doesn't snap the neck.
Like I was saying, because there's something about that tension. Because some of them are lighter and some of them are heavier than a normal set of heavy bass strings. They're just so good.
Yeah, they really are. They really are so good. They sound absolutely fantastic.
I mention two things that have affected my tone?
Yeah.
One of them we bang on about a lot, which is the Jim Dunlop Echoplex preamp, which for me, out of all those things, actually the Amateratsu does get close, but it's less widely available. Out of all those things that you can just put in a signal chain and leave on, the Echoplex preamp I think is the best, if not... It's one of the best, if not the best.
You're absolutely right.
That Amateratsu is the first thing that I've heard, actually, that I kind of went, this might be a bit better than the Echoplex preamp. But obviously, they're kind of limited distribution. You can't just walk into a guitar shop and buy one of those. The Dunlop Echoplex, for a pedal that's widely available, is not ridiculous money. I think it's something that everyone should buy, as well as a compressor. If that's the basis of your sound, I think you would do even better by having a decent preamp in there as well, and the Echoplex pre I think is the best one. The other thing I wanted to mention is legitimately Jim Dunlop green guitar picks, because they are the best guitar pick, and for years I didn't use them. Like when I was first starting to play guitar, then I switched to them, and now I cannot play anything else.
I have four in my pocket
I know
right now.
We laugh when Matt says, oh, because he plays the chicken picks, is that what they're called?
He has a 3.5 mil, 4 mil,
which are like super heavy and cost like, I don't know, 50 quid a go or something ridiculous. No, they're not that much, but they are about a tenner a go.
Yeah, 8 or 9 quid, I think.
For me, I don't think you need to spend that much on picks, but I cannot stress how much better I sound when I'm using the green Dunlop Tortex.
Well, I'll go the other route. My tone improved when I started using, playing fingerstyle.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's totally dependent on the kind of music, I think, that you play.
Exactly, yes.
I would struggle very much to do what I do with playing the fingers. It would be problematic. There are punk bass players who can do it. I can't do it. I need
Here's
those,
a question.
Tortex
would you,
greens.
Would you need the compressor if you were using a plectrum? That's my favourite compressor. Jim Dunlop.
Well, I probably wouldn't be playing the kind of stuff that I'm playing. I wouldn't be able to with a pick. So I wouldn't need the compressor. But I wouldn't be doing what I do.
Jeremy says, any tips for cleaning a maple fretboard? I heard that lemon oil isn't good for the maple. J. Cross.
Just some good old bloody elbow grease, mate.
Just get in there.
Just get a cloth and
squeeze out your elbow.
That's right. Rub your elbow on your fretboard. You don't need to. I don't think the lemon oil is bad for maple.
It's just not going to do anything.
It
doesn't do anything
because the whole point of what lemon oil does is it conditions the fingerboard, and the fingerboard in a rosewood board or like Pal Ferro is open grain.
Yep.
So you need to be able to get in there and condition it and hydrate it. But with a maple board, usually they're lacquered over the top, and it's a harder wood. It's, you know, it's
less porous.
Yeah, less. Yeah, yeah, fewer porous. And yeah, you just need to get a good guitar cloth, a lint-free cloth, and just give it a good old scrub.
Toothbrush as well, and just some water.
Toothbrush.
That's a good way if it's really gnarly.
Yes.
Then use a toothbrush.
Your partner's, though, not yours.
Yeah, just someone
a
else's
soft toothbrush.
Yeah,
someone else's toothbrush.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is definitely not the best advice, but I used to use a Stanley blade to clean maple fretboards.
What
on earth were you doing that your fingerboards were getting that grubby?
A lackered maple board.
Exactly, right. Okay. So after this is what I used to do after a long tour. There'd be like quite a lot of grime on it, because I'm quite a sweaty bass player.
Quite a sweaty man.
I'm not. Yeah. Okay, fine. And obviously, you know, like doing half an hour of punk thrashing around would leave the fretboard quite sweaty. So after a tour, there would often be times when, yeah, just basically a Stanley blade, very low profile towards the board, and just scrape off the stuff. That's part one. Part two is some wire wool, cleaning
wool?
Stuff.
Don't
then,
listen to this,
because,
please.
I would use that for the frets, and again, wouldn't recommend it if you don't know what you're doing, because you can go quite badly wrong. But yeah, cleaning the frets with that, and then the polish that I always bang on about, which I highly recommend, Music Nomad guitar polish.
I was
going to
say, yeah,
is really good, because you can, if you've got a maple board, you can do the body with that, and you can do the neck with that.
Wait, do you use that as well?
I use Music Nomad. Yeah.
It's the best guitar polish, and I don't know if they're in more UK stores now, but because for years you couldn't get it. I think they've got a distributor in the UK now, and I think you can. I don't know how many stores it's in.
The distributor is also the UK manager of Vigier Guitars.
Well, there we go.
Yeah,
there
high
we
tech
go.
Distribution.
What is the board on your green Vigier? Is that rosewood?
Rosewood, yeah.
Yeah. Music Nomad products. We talked about it before.
Yeah, super high quality.
Yeah,
just
it's the best one. It's
worth the investment.
Yeah, I think we've told the story. The guy who invented it basically worked in the car polish industry for years, but he was a guitar player, and he was like, all guitar polishes are rubbish. Why don't I just
ruining
do...
guitars, yeah.
Well, they're just not very good. Like, they don't clean guitars very well. Generally, because I think they are... They're usually, like, accessories companies who do a load of stuff, like Jim Dunlop, Fender do a guitar polish, which is
Gibson
not
do
fantastic.
One,
Gibson do one, but I think they're just buying it from China or something and then going, yeah, this is our polish. Whereas this guy approached it from a totally different angle and went, I know a lot about polish. I happen to be a guitar player. I'm going to use my polish knowledge to do this for guitars. And it is the best polish, absolutely. And if you've got a maple board, you can use the, I think it's called the One. That is their like guitar polish. It's like an all-in-one system. You can use that on the neck as well.
Do you know what I did use while on tour, though, and I just needed like quick wipes for those Ernie Ball... Like ready-made wet wipes.
For touring and stuff.
For touring, useful. But if you're really going to do a deep clean, then Music Nomad.
Yeah, I guess if you're flying as well, you probably can't fly with the bottled stuff. So yeah, those things are pretty cool for that.
I used to use teak oil.
Okay.
Actual,
like furniture polish.
Yeah.
Terrible
idea. It was a terrible idea. And I think it went out of date at some point. And I used to put it on before I played shows. I don't know. I thought it made me play faster, I think, at the time.
You're just covering your hands in it.
Yeah, and I think it went out
into
of date and just ended up being... I remember playing a show where it was just really, really sticky.
Oh, that sounds horrible.
Yeah, it was awful.
I really, really wanted... When I first got into working in guitar shops, the thing that we would recommend to everyone was a thing called Boogie Juice for rosewood boards, which used to come in basically a... like a marker pen tube, and it would like come out the end of the marker pen. Like, it had like a... You know, like a felt tip end? It had that, but instead of felt tip coming through it, it was basically like a Lemoil type thing.
That's very weird.
It was cool. It was a really cool product. And I think it was just made by like some bloke in his garage who was... Because it had like... It didn't have any proper branding on it. It had just like a sticky label that said Boogie Juice. So I want to find out what happened to that guy, and I want to find out if we can get Boogie Juice back into production, because it was a cool thing. With that, we should wrap up this podcast, but of course we're going to go and do more over on our Patreon episode. I think the plan is we've got a ton of questions for Mary, so we're going to answer those over on the Patreon episode, which you can hear at patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $1 a month you can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. $1 a month gets you the regular episode ad free and early. $5 a month gets you the extra episode where we'll be doing questions for Mary this week, And $10 a month gets your name read out on the regular episode by Joe Branton.
I think Mary should do it.
I was about to say, normally by Joe Branton.
I always suck at this, though.
So you've got, the challenge is you've got to do all the names in one breath while we do the a little bit of backing music. Do you think you can do this?
I accept the challenge, but yeah. It's unlikely.
Okay, fine. Joe Branton, do you want to lead the music this week?
Do I have to do all the full name?
Yes, you have to do the full name. My God. And there's what, something like 35 names now? Maybe there's more than that.
Yeah, this has definitely
names.
Gone up.
So yeah, something like that. So that is the challenge. You've got one breath to do it.
We've got to pick
Joe's
a song.
Joe's going to sing a song in 4, 9, or something.
Never 4.
I have to do a disclaimer because if I pronounce any of these names wrong, I'm really sorry.
I deliberately pronounce them wrong.
He does it wrong
each
every week.
I hate these people.
Right. So, Joe Branton, strike up the band. Mary, take a deep breath and prepare to read the names.
Da, da, da.
Brian McDermott, Robert Cousins, Rob Gruhl, Nate Nagel, Tucker Amadon, Ernie Cooper, Emerald, James Baker, Milton Bradford, Hayden Omar, Matt Roberts, Dave Lee, Derek Fitzgerald. I took a breath. Okay. I sucked. I went too slow.
Keep going.
Matt Davis, Aaron Shaman, keep the music up. Jake Gray, Blake Wyland, Christopher Lozeth, Juan Correa, Scott Kennedy, Robin Smith, Robin North, this is taking too long. Rob Grant, Derek Rich, Chris Connors, Andy Joyce, Carlos Mancha, Steve Michael, Flatops, Mark Cross, Brad Page, JD Short. Yes, JD Short. Andy McKenzie, Laurie Art, Paul Corrigan, Will Scott, Phil Moog, Colin. There we go. That was the most anxious I've ever been in my life.
And that, listeners, is why you should be aware of just quite what a feat it is.
Yes, you're quite so talented.
It is quite amazing that the bad physical condition that you're in, each week you do manage to do it in one breath.
The music that you were doing underneath that just made it so
no one else has managed it. We need to get more guests on to see if they can take on the challenge of doing
it. I think you need to give them the names in advance.
Sure, like, you can have a practice.
I could come up with a song for that.
Yeah, sure. You could.
If you want to get involved in the conversation, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. You can also go to Twitter and Instagram @guitar nerds, and you can watch some YouTube videos at youtube.com/guitar nerds videos. Mary, where can people find out more about you and see your stuff on da internet?
YouTube, just type in Mary Spender, and then maryspender.com, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that malarkey.
Good stuff. I rerouted markpackham.com the other day, which is a domain that I own. Now just goes to my Twitter. Before, it went to like a university project. So.
I own some good ones. I went on a buying spree some time ago.
Okay.
No, that's it. I don't want to tell people what they are.
Yeah. I own bigspenderrecords.com.
Big Spender Records.
I'm really annoyed at that pedal company.
What, Brantone?
Brantone. Mm.
They've got your domain down.
They've got it. Yeah,
that's a shame.
If I remember correctly, jcross.com is owned by some like management consultant.
But
Mark,
could you have like
but
J?
He's dead now.
Could so. You have
he's
J?
Dead.
Yeah, he died. Yeah, yeah.
Did you have something to do with that?
I didn't have anything to do with it.
Okay,
no.
there can only be one.
He would have sorted out the domain first.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Excuse me, mate. Can I have your domain? No. He really weirdly like he used to because I follow a load of like economists and stuff.
You
on,
follow
like,
everyone called J Cross.
No, I definitely don't do that. But I follow a load of like economists on Twitter and stuff. And when he died, like a bunch of people that I like really like were tweeting like, oh,
RIP J Cross.
And I was like, what is happening?
With that, we should kill this podcast. Thanks so much for listening. We will speak to you next week.
Cheers, gang.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.